Blog Talk Radio.
Deborah Harry by day and Bridget Bardot by night. And you have a holistic approach life as a whole. That's quite a compliment.
It is.
You know, like, for instance, I think everybody loves Deborah Harry, but Bridget Bardot is, like, to me, almost another Sophia Loren, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
my icon is Sophia Loren.
Oh, yeah, me too. Still in her 80s. She's still so... I would talk a little bit more about you here. Now, your quote is saying is you're you're a woman and you like to celebrate being a woman. Tell me about that first.
Everything I do is based out of, I have no complaints about being a woman. I celebrate being a woman powers, and I love men and their powers, but I like honing in on what my tools are, and I like that I can use being a woman at another level without a power.
So you love the sensuality of being a woman, the, like you said,
everything, the very essence, the others. Extravagant way, having the freedom to palette I want in terms of like actual colors, or I'm basically being the creator,
right,
is what I'm in love with. I would.
So you're an artist, and life is sort of your palette.
Life is my motivation.
You're more. That's a great thought. No, that's awesome. One thing I love, I saw some of your videos, and I love the music that you play. But your act is based, you said, on old Hollywood, and you bring a lot of, I've heard big band, some sort of Rat Pack music. What other type of music do you like to use?
I love using the blues, rock and roll, basically are heavy music, a preference for me, piano and guitar, string, but lyrics, good lyrics. So I'm not really married to or a specific genre of music. It depends on the story, because every show I do has a through line script that I've written. Really about the story, not about my preference. But to me, what moves me are either the lyrics or the melody.
Okay, so a song, you can hear a song and just think, suddenly it'll click in and you have an idea.
Yeah, or like, for example, right now I'm working on the Naughty Nutcracker, which is a holiday story. And
Let's show that. Yeah, well, we have to make sure we show it.
True.
The Naughty Nutcracker. Tell us about that.
The Naughty Nutcracker is the third full-length production that I put on with my cabaret, Love Letters Cabaret. I perform as a solo, but also cabaret. I have about 20 dancers.
Wow.
And, we put on full-length shows, dinner theater style, at Lula Lounge. And for this one, I wanted to play on the characters of the Naughty Nutcracker. Of the Nutcracker, like the
right.
Classic story, but I didn't want to use the same script. So I was smoking shaw with a friend of mine at a bar, and Annie Lennox came on with Sweet, hit me that would be perfect for a specific line, just because of the way I was developing the character. Although she's a doll, I want her to be a little on the dark side, and then the song came on and it was perfect. So sometimes, it just comes like that, or sometimes I know right off the bat, this character is going to look this way, and this is the meal.
Right.
Either it's kismet, or serendipity, or sometimes it's just planned.
Got it. No, that makes a lot of sense.
So it's a mix of everything. I'm not really sure where the music. It'll just jump out at me.
Now, where is the Naughty Nutcracker going to be?
At Lula Lounge.
Lula Lounge. Lula Lounge! Be there!
Lula Lounge, which is right here, 1585 Dundas West, in Toronto. In the West End.
And you better get your tickets now.
Yes.
Because I'm going to be buying a lot. Okay?
I'm going to read
better. I'm going to be there.
Good.
Trust me.
I'll call you out if you don't.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, we're not going to be airing this video, so... No, I'm just kidding. You know what? I hate to have to keep going to notes, because you've just done so much. Usually I just like to have a kind of a conversation, but... You've toured with Nelly Furtado. You've, in Toronto, you're with Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was that like touring with Nelly Furtado? Like, I saw the video of that from Showtime, and it was unbelievable, your routine.
It was amazing. It was an eye-opener. It was an accidental gig.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to be in a band, and she heard about us in Toronto at the time. And she loved it. She came backstage afterwards, asked me if I wanted to be in a VS.
Well,
so
yeah.
She flew me to LA. She was preparing for her Loose record. Then the video turned into a little promo gig here and hey, little smaller things. And then suddenly she was awesome. Like, she really likes what I do with the pinup. I was always branding myself as a pinup. So she gave me pointers here and just performing in 1,000 people plus every night in Santa.
Can't imagine that, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful, very addictive. Spring is life. I love it.
Now, for those of you who aren't sure, think of 80,000 people. Mm-hmm. You have a football stadium. entire stands plus a few thousand more on the field. Think about that. Okay? Check out a live AC/DC video. Now you know what. I think I'd freeze. I think I'd kind of freeze. I'm not sure. I've only been, like, the most I've ever been in front of doing something was a couple thousand, but...
It's very interesting because they, being the audience, are there to have a good time. So they're just shooting energy at you. So it's not perform, it's love. So the moment you see that, you want to give back, and then it becomes an amazing exchange of energy and...
I can see adrenaline,
magic.
Too, gets going and picks you up.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that happens if I'm performing in front of my mom. Like, performing, you always get a little bit.
Now, there's a question. Mom.
Mom.
How did Mom feel when you first kind of thought about getting into old-style burlesque and doing the classy? There's nothing like old-style burlesque, you know?
Well, it's interesting. I've been doing... step modeling, and I've always been in love with Marilyn Monroe and Sophia Loren mainly, and I've always loved the vamps, so that style is not surprising at all, and when I was doing cabaret, it was just a matter of time to actually implement classic burlesque in my shows. So, she knows where it all comes from, and she loved it, and she is my motivation, like, my inspiration, the way she carries a proper lady, basically had finishing school when I got from her, like, she taught me all kinds of things, like, these at-home classes, I teach everything about femininity and etiquette come from her, so, it's so glamorous,
you're right.
and when you do it properly and with poise and attention to detail, there are no problems.
It's really interesting, too, because people think burlesque, and this is very sad to me, they think strip joints right away, and there's a difference. Forget about that, and you know what, the best way is to go and see Pastel. That's the best way. You'll see it is sexy, it is classy. As you mentioned, you bring out your sexuality, your sensuality, and it is a pure art.
It is. It's completely theatrical. My shows, particularly because classic ballet and contemporary dance are very choreographed, there's a lot of dancing on my...
live TV!
My company is full of professional dancers. Like, we are dancers first, and then we add the clown and the commedia and the theater camp to it as we build the show. But it's different from everything. This is my take on the past, on old Hollywood, my modern sensibility. It's all in there. I'm the only Pastel Supernova thief.
And you know what's funny, too? Do you ever integrate some of the old vaudeville?
Absolutely.
That's slowly, people don't realize, that's slowly making a comeback. And it seems like you're just way ahead of everybody.
Well, it's never been gone. I think that the new resurgence of Hollywood movies that have come out with burlesque-themed showgirls and... you know, the dark sense of humor is definitely responsible for making people aware that it's there. But everything has a little bit of camp, burlesque, and vomit. Every little kind of grimy part of town where it's very artsy, the community has always been a matter of making it
back
accessible.
And into the mainstream, like, people don't realize, good movie for you guys to watch is, I think it was filmed in New York, or is about in New York, The Night They Raided Minsky's. Outstanding movie, but this is when the police raided and closed down Minsky's Burlesque.
True story.
And yeah, it is a great story. So if you're not sure what vaudeville and burlesque is, there's an idea, but you know what? Just go and see Pastel. I will find you if you don't, okay? She's a really nice, really nice lady. Well, you know what? Let's bring this up. Let me ask you, because you mentioned it, heels at home. Now, I personally, the only heels I wear are on my boots. Okay.
Right.
So I've never worn stiletto heels. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Heels at Home. What is that?
Heels at Home is the first of the Finishing
School. Your future Finishing School.
That I grew up learning from. House of Latino Land. My house. High heels is the main thing. Like, for me, just as a woman, I always need high heels. I think they're, because I come from ballet, it's the street version of a pointe shoe. Like, it just finishes lines, it lengthens your legs.
Yes.
You know, but there's a certain way to wear them. You can't force you to be looked at. So it's a matter of presenting yourself so that the pedestal you stand on.
Okay.
But they're not easy to walk in.
That's...
The higher the shoe...
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Now, wearing a running shoe is one thing. It's flat. But when you get into heels, especially the higher heels, how do you, like, move your body so you can watch? Like, do you have to...
You change your posture completely. You have to be comfortable with your body being accentuated in the way that we want it to be accentuated. Like, it's, I don't know. I just find Charna's very conservative a lot.
Too conservative.
But yeah. It's supposed to show off your booty and your chest. It lunges you forward so that to counterbalance, you are in a figure eight stance. And so, I mean, you just have to deal with that. And there are different ways of dealing with that without feeling like you're too extra or whatever. But mainly, heels at home is just like little things. Like, don't walk in high heels with your legs too far apart. Or this is how you go down the steps. Or, you know, it's just like placement, or here are great ways to practice your heels. Like, I am a big advocate of wearing your high heels in the house.
Really?
To break them in. Yeah, sure. You cannot go out in brand new heels.
Oh, that's a
practicing.
Great idea.
So you wear them in, and, like, I bake a lot, so I suggest doing housework in heels, not for a look. I mean, it looks fantastic.
Can I come over one day to watch you do housework and bake?
No. They could break them in. But I do take a lot of pictures, and so I made very simple tutorials.
Okay.
Based on, like, 1940s tutorials with one lesson each. Just a very short skit, basically, to teach how to do it in a simple way. And I had some of them in host.
Segment?
Each segment.
Okay.
And then with every video, we made a little comic book version, so I shot it. So, for example, this is Simple Steps, and this is my beautiful singer friend, Dominique Grant, and we just go through the steps of going up and down stairs. So, for the staircase in a high heel, the trick is toe in, toe out.
Okay.
In, toe out. They're just two steps, and I just explain how that happens, and in the video you see her do it. Here you see her talk about it and laugh about it, and they're really cute and simple, but the beginnings of how this kind of life is fun, it's glamorous, it's extra, but it also makes you feel good, because there's nothing worse than walking down the street, feeling stared at when you're not ready to be stared at, and then
yeah.
You trip. You know, it's nice to be a bombshell.
I've tripped.
You've tripped, so have I.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know what's funny, too, because you mentioned about some ladies, I think, need a lesson in, because they look like truck drivers when they walk in heels. And I know I used to have the big platform shoes when I was doing a Frankenstein, okay? And, oh, man, I was horrible. It was like I was walking in, like, 2 feet of snow,
mm-hmm.
bringing my feet up and down like this.
Yes.
So, yeah, some women I've noticed, they're not very graceful, and that must be really hard.
Practice. Like, it makes me crazy. It's a pet peeve of mine. It's like wearing anything that doesn't feel right, don't feel right, don't wear them. But if you want them to, like everything, you have to practice.
And
you don't play Bach in one take. You have to practice and take lessons. And
right.
I know walking sounds power to it down the street.
Well, you mentioned Marilyn Monroe and Sophia Loren. You want to talk about walks.
Known for their walks.
Especially Sophia Loren. Like, she just, I don't know how to put it, but...
She accentuated her lady bits.
She did.
She walked with a sway, always in a figure eight. She's like a snake walking. I mean, Marilyn Monroe used to shave off half an inch off of her left shoe so that it would, like, give her a specific
bounce. Oh, really?
When she walked, and that was what she did. With.
I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I'm picturing her walking a bus stop, and
Every movie she did, there's a walking scene.
Yeah.
Because it was so scandalous. And she always laughed and said, well, I just put one foot, but it's how you do it.
That is cool. Something else I want to bring up. You have, and you might not be getting this back, I may be stealing it, but in all seriousness, Estelle Kabuk. And it is your calendar for 2003.
13.
Oh, that's what I mean, 2013. I'm going to edit that. This is incredible. Well, actually, why don't you show some of the pictures? That, you know, this is a beautiful, beautiful, like, retro kind of style calendar. It's just incredible.
I love cheesecake pinups, and I've always done cheesecake, so this year I decided to do different styles of pinup with Devo. There'll be a variety. There's some that are a little bit more performance-based, a little bit more artsy, almost Vargas style, but not quite. And then one of these, this is February.
That's
very cheesecake.
My month. I was born on the 16th.
February 16th?
Saturday.
Saturday. And then there are others that are a little bit more theatrical. Me as a blonde.
Well, yes.
And then just for kicks, I shot like a Maxim style, like a modern day type of pinup, where the aesthetic is still there, but just the style of photography is different.
Yeah.
And it's very, I don't think, like men's magazine. These, of course, I have to show you my tribute to Betty Page.
Wow.
Yep. I love.
For those who don't know who Betty Page is.
Pinup icon of amazing. She was first to get so famous. Just a lot of photos and did a few films. I mean, there's some scandal behind. All around a very wholesome, beautiful woman who, again, like me, loved being a woman and had no apologies about it.
Yeah.
So she was known for a jungle, which I have a performance to, a burlesque performance.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a tribute to her.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Less girls have a
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be nice, yeah. Actually, you can find some of Betty Page's stuff on Facebook, but go to Pastel Supernova on Facebook or PastelSupernova.com.
PastelSupernova.com. It's my window footage,
yes.
Acting, dancing, a lot of modeling. I sell all of these things and the company. Past that I have in love letters and video us as a group.
Actually, we should hold that up, the love letters.
Some of my company, Love Letters Cabaret, this is to promote our cabaret experience exploring decadence, seduction, and romance.
Really bringing back, as you just said, the seduction in life, the taboo that, as we got too politically correct kind of thing, you're kind of just bringing back sensuality into people's lives.
Absolutely. You can't live in a dry world. I mean, I'm just a sexual person by nature. I think everything should be sexy and not raunchy, but I think if there's no attraction, there's no connection to the people around you or the things you do, you're not at least partially in love with every single thing in your life, you're missing out. So from what I've seen, that people are just afraid of being judged. It's not that people aren't feeling, they're just every performance I do or the shows that I create are catered to letting people feel what I call animal, which is just feel free for an hour and a half, 2 hours, an hour, to just feel whatever it is that they feel, judgment, but just being animal, just sitting, accepting, and seeing what happens. That's what I want. And part of that primal need is to be sensual, to be hungry, to live.
The basic
passion.
Human emotions.
Absolutely.
And that's what's gone out over, I've noticed, over the time of politically correct. Like, it's just not just saying things, it's just being human, I find.
Absolutely.
You know, like, if you say, oh, they have great chemistry together, or we have great chemistry together. No. Chemistry is Dr. Sheldon Cooper in the Big Bang Theory. That's chemistry. That's what he does. It's passion. It's connection that you have, whether it's watching a movie, you get kind of attracted to the movie. You're attracted to the person. I never figured out why you can't use the word attraction anymore. No?
Yeah, well, in North America, that means there's a relationship. Somewhere else, I mean, it's very natural, but my world, it's very real word, and I love using it. And if there's no attraction, if I use chemistry too, there's no thing I want to hone in on. And I think the past is a really great let out, because it's slightly, I put my voice on my modern day. I also tell my story through that. But my dancers each are all their own characters. They're very strong. They have things to say too. So choreography, they make it their own. They're also voices, not just me. It's a cast of power. I always say we. If you ever watch the Care Bears, little cartoon bears that
I know them,
stand and they shoot love out of their bellies, and that's how they destroy all the chaos that's going on whenever bad characters, evil characters come in and try to ruin everything. They Care Bear stare. I always tell them right before a performance that we're going to Care Bear.
That's different. I like that, though, because, again, it's just not something that we've lost it today, you know, and it's nice to see someone like you. You're bringing that, not bringing it back. I think it's there, just people are afraid to say it.
Absolutely.
You know, like, people are afraid if a beautiful woman like yourself is walking down the street, you know, their eyes turn, but what's wrong with turning and smiling?
Well, you know? It's definitely a lot less creepy. Because when you're just shifting over like it's a bad thing, then I'm thinking you're thinking bad things.
Yeah.
But if you say, hi, fantastic, hi back.
Yeah.
There's the exchange, that's all you need.
Yeah.
You don't even have to say hi, a smile, a look, but definitely if you don't restrict yourself by thinking petty and crazy, then I'm not going to think you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I won't start walking like, don't talk to me. And I think that's in general, everybody, I mean, you do that, life, but it's a little dry for
you're
me.
You're bringing back, you really are, you're bringing back the fact that we're allowed to be open again. Just be ourselves again without having to hide behind those two words, politically correct, you know? And I like that. I like the fact that you're open, like you said, about your femininity. You love being feminine. You like everything there is to being a woman.
Mm.
And I think that's great. And I love your show. I've seen some of your videos, and I am going to be there in person to watch you. Not in a creepy way. I'll smile and wave, you know.
We definitely love hoots and hollers and heckles and cheers. And
oh, you do like that?
Absolutely. It's a cabaret. It's very intimate. We like wild behavior. We're wild. I don't pretend to have a family show. It's definitely 19-plus show where you drink and get rowdy and you have a good time. Like, you really are free to feel whatever. It's all love. It's all respect. We give the audience tons of good vibes, and we expect that in return, and all we want to do is have a great party. We'll put on an amazing show, and you know, the happier you are, the louder you get, that's fantastic.
Now, do you ever bring anybody out of the audience, women?
Absolutely.
And men, and do stuff?
Men and women, everybody. My shows are very interactive. What I like to do is create a very large show and put it in a very small lounge. Isn't that small, but I put on a very large show in there, so like, we're very close to sweating on people. Like, we break, we go through the crowd. It's site-specific, so I have numbers that start, you know, in the audience space that come in through today. I use the whole space. By default, you are part of the show once you enter the room. Very interactive. And some of that has to do with coming up and dancing. It has to do with just being, like, having a moment with one of the dancers by you.
Right.
She might eat off of your plate. We do that.
Right,
we steal drinks. We'll buy you a new one, but we steal drinks and we have a good time. That's what I love about cabaret.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now how many people does cabaret hold?
Blue Lounge holds, I have a
170. Okay.
170, 200.
So that is a fair size.
It's a fair size. We fill it up every time. Next three shows should be great.
September 18th and 20th.
Two shows on the 20th. Yeah, we do an early show and a late show.
Hey, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Always.
There's no reason to miss it.
Mm-mm.
Okay. See, now you might be sorry you said you take people out out of the audience. Now, I love my Toronto Argos, okay? And out of 40,000 people, when there's a promotion on, they tend to come and find me to do some silly promotion on the field. I'm the fun, wild guy. Okay? So I'll get up and I'll do anything. I've gotten up and tried doing hula dancing. I've tried, you name it, I have tried it. So, you
That's
know.
That's a great thing to know.
I'll be going, pick me, you know. No, I'm. Don't laugh, that's me. I'll be saying,
I
like,
believe you. We don't usually give the choice, though. We will take somebody. We will bring them.
Oh, so and see now, so what you're saying is, we're bypassing you because you're too wacky for us, okay? So now I can't
That's
go.
Judgment. My show is judgment-free.
Oh! So there is a chance that...
Perhaps.
Either you or one of the girls will pull me out.
It's very possible.
Okay. That okay. I would go anyway, just to see you, because I am a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Is there anything, very quickly, you could maybe just show me? Like, if you put me up out of the audience, what was there something you would do? Like, a dance, or...
It's different. The last show for my performance, my solo, was a very beautiful number. Live singer, and all the dancers had tent. Very, very romantic and very beautiful, and I did a set for the rest of the dance. In other numbers, I've had a host, Mysterio on the Mentalist, who, he does illusions and card tricks, and it's a little bit more vaudeville that way, where he has people come and just, you know, he'll guess what they're doing, what they're thinking, he'll read minds, bad stuff like that. Other times, it's just a matter of going under the limbo. Depends on the show every time. I'm not going to give anything away for the Naughty Nutcracker, but it is...
So, you know, he's just kind of giving you a hint, okay? Not just Pastel. She's not only my Facebook friend, but go and see Pastel, the Lula Lounge, December the 18th and 20th.
Yes.
Two shows on the 20th.
Yes.
And I'll be there. You'll know me, trust me. I'll be like, oh, please take me, please. The one and only international, beautiful star, Pastel Supernova. I want to thank you for being on Confest TV and also be on Confest Radio.
Fantastic.
We can't thank you enough for being here, and hopefully in the future you'll come back.
Yeah.
Would love to see you.
For sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, no. Old style. Thank you. Cut. Well, everybody, that was Pastel Supernova, and what an incredible lady she is. I should have told you, and I forgot, that what we did is we also filmed it, and we're going to have that on the Confest Radio Facebook page. You'll be able to see the video, and she was kind enough to also give us some video. So what we're going to do is put that up, and you can see some of her dancing, some of her routines, as well with her dance crew. She's phenomenal. You have to see her to believe her. She's incredibly phenomenal, and it was such a pleasure to talk to her. She's such a very sweet young lady, and to see her show is something you probably wouldn't expect. Somebody that professional. So what we're going to do, I just want to say quickly, after the Atlanta Miles interview, we're going to have some time, so we want to invite callers there. This is what you have to do. Go to Confest Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Okay? You want to find Confest Radio. Or the radio, just go Confest in the search bar. Don't worry about calling long distance. What we want you to do is hit the Skype button for those of you on computers, and you can talk to us free of charge. If you're on a cell phone, go to Skype.com and download the mobile app. Okay? Skype.com, download the mobile app, and that'll allow you to call in. And hey, if you got friends somewhere in Canada, somewhere in the States, what you can do is talk to them now free. So that's a great idea too. I want to remind everybody that this interview with Atlanta Miles is completely unedited. What we're also going to be doing is roughly every 20 minutes, I'm going to take a break, and that way it allows you to go grab a Coke. You know, you can go do what you have to do while I'm talking. You don't want to miss Atlanta. You have to trust me on this. Atlanta Miles, just absolutely a heck of a lady. I'm not going to build it up any more than that. I can't.
But I will say this. You will be stunned at what has happened to our girl, Alana Miles. Just an incredible lady. Incredible interview. She's just absolutely...
Everybody, you're tuned into Comfest Radio, and I tell you, I have such an exciting interview right now with Canada's icon, the one and only lady who we all fell in love with back in 1989 and is still a dynamo today, the one and only Grammy Award winning
and Juno.
You jumped in too quick. As you hear, ladies and gentlemen, that's Alana Miles. Alana, thank you so much for being on Comfest Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. You're an absolutely delightful man, and it's a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. And thank you for being my Facebook friend, too, I want to say. As a fan, that makes me feel so cool.
Well, you know, I've always known that maybe I may have pissed a few people off along the way, but I always knew my fans were at radio and maybe not anybody who had an axe to grind or something to prove, but what has happened over the years is they have become respectful and they just like my music, you know? So I owe them the reciprocal respect for that love, because without them, I wouldn't have what I have. My fans are at radio. That's why I was so successful. The program director, the person spinning the tune, and put them into high rotation so that the folks could hear it, and it just went on from there.
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, no. I remember when your album came out. I was actually doing some DJing at the time, and every person... Do you have Alana Miles of Black Velvet? Do you have Alana Miles? And every, not just Black Velvet, but every hit they loved, Lover of Mine.
It's funny to think that the radio director at Atlantic many, many years ago, back in 87, 88, or more like 88, just before prior to the release of the record, was concerned that it was one of those females on a very corrupt label who they just said, drop everything and release this, because maybe some, oh gee, I gotta be careful what I say, because maybe some favors were exchanged.
Oh, man.
And so they just assumed it was one of those favors and put it on the back burner until someone came along within the company and said, yeah, I know a lot of them. No, I just shelved it. She was too pretty. So he pulled it out, and from the first, oh, yeah, yeah. And he's like, oh, my God, like, was I wrong? And he'll never forget telling me that story.
Well, yeah, this is something I want to tell you, actually. A couple years ago, I listen to a radio show, Coast to Coast. It's with George Norrie, but occasionally they play all different types of music. And Art Bell, who originally started this, he does everything from...
I know the name Art Bell.
Yeah, he does the stuff like Controversies, like Jesse Ventura kind of stuff that's out now, you know. UFOs. So anyway, to make a long story short, he was come back from a commercial and Black Velvet was playing, and he goes, oh, do I love that song. He goes, we recorded a bit of that song. He goes, the reason I'm playing it is, if anybody out there, could you please tell me who this is? I have to buy this album. And
seriously?
I swear to
God.
How
long ago was this?
This was about 2 years ago. And
break. It was
Oh, he's still on. He's
No, but is he a young one? Because if you're under 20, I can understand you not knowing who Black Velvet Singer is. But anybody over 20, well, you know.
Oh no, he's in his like early 70s.
Oh my goodness. Okay,
so
that explains it, because when he was 50, he wasn't listening to Black Velvet to popular radio, maybe.
Right.
Maybe he wasn't a rock and roll fan.
I'm not sure, but the funny thing is, he went to commercial again, and about
I think we should call Art Bell, don't you?
We could do that.
Yeah. Art, what's going on here?
But after that, he came back from commercial, and he goes, okay, people, please, stop. You've crashed our website. People were writing in, Alana Miles from Toronto, Alana Miles, she did this and this and and.
I love that.
And
I love that. That's
I was
lovely.
So proud of you. I thought, oh my God, you know, and he kept playing it and playing it. And he goes, I went out and I just bought the CD and I went out and I did this and, you know.
Oh, wow. Isn't that nice? I remember years ago, I wasn't very, let's call it, what's that, I'm at a loss for words, which is rare. The Canadianism, that you're devoted
patriotic.
It slipped my mind, but I had lost faith in the Canadian industry, in the music industry, having rejected me so frequently and so vehemently, and. So I wasn't very, whatever that word is, and devoted to Canadians, and so devoted to my country.
But patriotic.
That's the word. And so I kind of was kind of, you know, not altogether patriotic until the outpouring from Canadians owning Alana Miles as their own. And I'll tell you, I learned a new sense of patriotism from my fans. They taught me that.
You belong to us. I mean, that's how we feel, you know. Like,
I may be not a Canadian artist. I'm an international artist. But I do belong to Canada, because this is where I got my beginnings. I listened to FM radio. I listened to all the fabulous music that Canada provided me to make me who I am, to introduce me to all the fantastic artists who, by the way, were mostly Canadian.
Right.
My influences, anyway. You know, the Neil Youngs and Leonard Cohens and Joni Mitchell and, oh, God, shall I go on, you know?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Sarah McLachlan, I'm not a fan, but her voice is extraordinary. Katie Lang, Brian Adams, you know, and maybe I opened the doors for people like Alanis Morissette and maybe, you know, somebody like Shania Twain.
I was actually going to say that later on, I thought you did open the door, especially for Alanis Morissette, because now this is Bill Sanchez.
Everybody thought it was my new record.
Well, yes, because I think she patterned herself a little bit after you.
Well, I think she did, and then when I was such a mean-ass bitch to her in an airport, she went, oh, I don't like you. And I don't blame her, and I'll apologize that till the cows come home, because I was a mean-ass bitch. I just come off a tour for my second Rocking Horse record that was 28 cities in 32 days.
Oh, well, that's understandable then, while you're a little bit off.
All my underwear zipped out of my, and fell out of my zipper pocket because they were checking.
Oh.
I didn't zip it back up.
Oh, geez.
And I was all bitchy, and there she was going, hi, how are you? I'm a big fan. And I went, Meanie, you know, and I feel so bad because she really is a sweet and lovely girl. I've learned a ton from her. You know, of how to accept awards for one. You know, how to
right.
Gracious, and how to dismiss the bullcrap that people put forth when you become a phenomenal success. And I tell you, Bill, there must be, I don't know if I'm right, but I'll bet you she's been called Miss Miles on many occasions, or Alana Morissette, because I've been called Alana Smiles on many occasions. It must go both ways. There must have been a confusion factor.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. I've had a weird, weird career. Yeah, the first hit I have, the record company is forcing some poor country girl to record the same song and release it at the same time. And I said, why did you do that? Well, you know, we want to make you into a Led Zeppelin. Well, people become Led Zeppelin because people make them that way. You can't force phenomenon. Ugh, whatever. Poor girl, her career was shot.
Well, you know who else, I think, and her, forgive me, her name just went right out of my head. From Ottawa, I remember she wore the Home Hardware shirt on. A T-shirt. I think she patterned her career after it. Tiny girl. She's married. Oh my God, Nickelback.
Avril Lavigne. I forget her name on numerous occasions.
I think she did pattern herself after you too. I mean,
you know what? I don't know, because she told everybody, I listen to nobody. I don't know anything.
I doubt that, because remember,
And all I hear is my brand of sassy humorous rock.
Yes, thank you.
You know, but that could have been the people she worked with, you see. She's very young.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
She's got a great voice, I must say. She does. She's got great personality in her voice. I just don't like the songs because they're not of my, you know, they're pop for kids.
Yes.
And I was much older than her when I came out with my music, and so the demands I placed upon myself for musical influences were far different. That's all. She's to be commended. I like her. I think she's got it going on.
Yes. Yeah, she does.
You know, she's got a seriously good voice. But we are, the industry forms the youth. When you're that young, the industry forms you. You know, it's like Justin Bieber could not possibly have formed himself.
That's true.
He couldn't have. He doesn't have what I had. I was 29 when my record got released. I was 29. You know, that's almost old enough to be their mother.
Yeah.
That's pushing it a bit, but you know what I mean.
Yes, stepmother.
Okay. Older sister. Older sister from another father.
Yeah, there you go.
But whatever. The point I'm simply making is I had an awful lot of time to assemble my musical tastes prior to my release of my first record.
Right.
I was seasoned.
Right.
And they are not. They're yet growing, growing up right in front of us.
Don't you think too many artists are doing that now? They're growing up in front of us instead of having a little bit of a background?
Well, unfortunately, the nature of the industry now is to get the youth out there and mold them and make what they can from them. And there are very few Lady Gagas.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm kind of on the fence with her. You know, she's very talented, but the shtick.
Madonna's not.
Yeah. To me, she's all marketing.
Well, she's talented, but we're gonna watch How the Mighty Fall. When you get that great, there's no place else to go but down.
That's true.
And I'm speaking from experience. You know. The fortunate thing is it really depends on what you do once you become there. And what I did was I continued making records and the quality of my music remained high regardless of whether I had the money from the company to promote me. I still made it a demand upon myself for the quality to be as high so I could live with myself regardless. Because one of these days when something comes out, people will go back to that catalog and go, oh, wow, and rediscover me.
Well, I don't think we've ever forgotten you. I mean, Lover of Mine just was a song that I think it hit everybody.
I want someone to record that and have it go viral. I would love Celine Dion to record it because she could sing the crap out of it. I guess it's not her kind of song.
I'm just trying to...
But I would love some great singer to get their mitts on that and make me all that writing and publishing.
Wow. Well, if I had the voice for it, I'd try it.
Oh, would you please, Bill?
Well, you know, we'd probably get a lot of comedy hits, but...
Or, you know, Justin Bieber. Or whoever. Sing. It's a good song. Go sing that song. Everybody will relate. Yeah, my day is coming where, you know, I don't... Christopher tried to explain it to me. He said there was a country artist in Nashville, and they were nuts for last time I saw William, and they wanted to, and they went forward to record it, and of course Christopher was happy because he co-wrote the song. It was mostly his song anyway. And it's a fabulous song, and
I put my
writing hat on it when I sang it when they were all dumbfounded as to what to do. And I said, leave a hole, holes work, I'm the queen of holes. So, being the queen of holes, I left last time I saw William, pause, he was all undone. And that hole speaks volumes. It makes people go, oh, and weep. That one hole. It's just a hole for people to get the power punch and then go, collect their thoughts and then go, oh. It's like how we cry. I understand that. I've spent so many tears through the writings of my songs that I understand how the people need to receive that hole to create the passion and the uplifting of the hearts and the remembrances of past hardships and sorrows. And it's in my music. That's how I do it. I call myself the Queen of Holes as a joke. But in that case, in that respect of William, the girl tried to record it, and she came back, and he thought he was going to see another potential hit, and she said, can't do it. I can't get to the place where she came from. There's no outdoing it. So it remains a classic, not a single. Perhaps it could have been a single in another day, you know?
So...
But there are many that have attempted to record the song, and like with Black Velvet, just was relaxed and calm and allowed my being to express. And when you think you have to be sexy, turn off because you push too hard. You push way too hard. And you don't need to. Not with that song.
So do you think if somebody did record that, it would sort of do what Whitney Houston did for Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You? Do you think it would?
Well, they're two very different songs.
Oh, I'm just talking like an analogy type of
thing. Because it's my belief that my contributors, David Tyson, who came up with that groove, Christopher came up with the melody and knew exactly what to give my voice to sing to create that
right.
Personification of the man and the secret, telling of the story of Elvis and the way he brought rock and roll to white America and made a new religion that will bring you to your knees from the, you know, borrowing from Jimmy Rogers on the Victrola up high. Do you know how many girls call the Victrola pie?
Really?
I have to correct them. It's not Victrola pie. It's not Victrola pie. It's Victrola up high. But they don't know what a Victrola is. You have to know. I researched Black Velvet. I researched Elvis. I gave the whisperings was Gladys holding baby Elvis in her arms. She'd lost his twin brother. They buried him in the backyard. Elvis was a twin. And she was graced with this one child, and she whispered with sweet nothings into his ear, affirmations of his success. And that's what I put into that record. That's what I'm whispering. Everybody wants to know. That's what I'm whispering. It's a song of love. I loved my music, and it's loving me back to this day.
Oh, no, you could tell that. Just like by the look on your face when you sang, just how you moved.
That's the only place. I didn't know what love is because I was never shown it as a child. But I did know, I must know what it is because I gave it to my music.
Well, you gave it to us. Again, as a fan, you really did.
Well, that's a little bit of the first part of the interview. This is going to give you a chance to go and grab another, well, let's be honest, it's Friday night. You're going to grab a beer. You're going to go grab some chips. You're going to do something. Now, shortly, you're going to hear a little different part of Alana. More of the heart comes out. But what I want to tell people who are listening, and wow, we have a lot of people on the chat line, and I'm going to try and get to you during the interview and answer your questions. But if you do want to call in, remember this, okay? On your phone, I'm sure everybody has a smartphone, but me, because I need glasses, so I don't use them. But go to Skype.com on your computer, or use your smartphone. Download the mobile app for Skype.com onto your phone. You can use that to call us toll-free. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can Skype us, okay? So remember that. Skype.com, get the mobile app. Use it on your phone, on your computer, and then call back in. Now, the next segment is almost about half an hour, and there's going to be, like I said, far more passion in her voice. You're going to hear stuff that you're not going to believe. It's going to just tug at you. It's absolutely incredible. What I'm going to do is still give you another minute, but have you noticed, like, when Alana was talking, she talks about how she researched the song. Elvis had a brother. Not many people know that, but she researched it. Elvis's brother died at birth, and she really is on top of things. She's not just somebody that, you know, oh, hand me a song, I'm going to go out and sing it. She really does do a lot of work. You're going to hear more and more of this passion coming out, and you're going to hear some things that you're not going to believe. And I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm not going to give you any spoilers. I'm just going to let you hear this, okay? So you should almost be ready. You should be back in your chair. You got your cubes in your drink. You got your next beer, in the beer koozie, and you're ready to go. You think so? Should I give you another second? Oh, you know what I'll do? I'll give you another second because I forgot. I'm so wrapped up in Atlanta Miles tonight. I forgot to do a shout-out to Randy and the Wolfpack. You guys are incredible. It was great having you on the show the other night, Randy. It was amazing. You know who that is? That's Gene. He's here in the studio with us, and he's listening to Atlanta Miles. I also want to thank Frank and Jamie from the Argo Admirals. John from the Toronto Argonaut Bow logo page. You guys rock. You guys. Oh, Jamie. Hey, man. I want to thank you for sending out all those tweets to the other Argo Admirals. And all the best of luck next year when you get hitched. And I'm going to start tweeting that you're getting hitched at midfield. Anyway, okay, too late. I'm going to put on the rest of this. So we got about 30 minutes. It's starting to get into the meat of the interview with Alana. And just really listen, because you're going to hear some heartbreaking tales. You're going to hear some heartbreaking stories. And remember, when you send out an email about ComFest Radio, it's two M's and two F's. ComFFEST. And you know what? There may be a big surprise on Monday night's show. Nothing with me. You know, I have a partner on that show. Maybe a big announcement. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I want to take you back to an incredible lady, a Canadian icon, a lady. I can't tell you about the record she sold. You're going to hear about it. Ladies and gentlemen, Alana Miles.
Well, welcome, everybody. You're tuned in to ComFest Radio. And I tell you, I have such an exciting interview right now with Canada's icon, the one and only lady who we all fell in love with back in 1989.
It's me. You know what happened? Our tape jumped. So we're not going to play the whole thing over. But what we are going to do, I'm waiting for a solution. I don't have a genie in a bottle. Well, our wonderful producer. So, well, you know what we're going to do is I'll start singing while we can jump to the second part. But maybe what I'll just do is we'll just have to play it over and go and go and go because our producer is, well, we don't know what our producer's doing. So what I'm going to do, anyway, you know what I'll do? I'm going to play a little bit of Love Is from Alana Miles, and I will be right back. Love Live Radio. I'm back. We're working on that right now, that little problem we've got. So you know what I'm going to do is I am going to invite the co-host here into our program, the man of the hour. But you know what I'm going to do while we're doing that is I'm going to play a little bit again of the original tune we played at the beginning of this, a little Black Velvet.
Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
that incredible? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome my co-host right now, the one and only Gene Mack. What do you think about that interview so far?
Oh, it's beautiful. The best thing I can tell you is the technology oftentimes fails. But I'm going to give you a little story. Back in the mid to late 80s, I lived on the beach, in the beach. Most people call it the beaches, but it's the beach. And at the time, Dan Hill, Atlanta Miles, and all those people lived on the beach, out on the beach area. And we had a great time. And right around the time she was producing this album, or in the studios making it, I would see her almost every day, and she would tell me, Gene, it's going along really great, and wow, you know. But I was a fixture, and she was a fixture, and it was a different time and a different place. And, you know, most people don't know how successful Black Velvet was.
Oh,
other
yeah.
than it supplanted BTO. And those of you who don't know who BTO was, is Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Yeah.
And Bachman Turner had the number one single selling Canadian record ever. Atlanta Miles overtook that with Black Velvet. And, you know, other than The Who, Glass Tiger, and of course Canadian's own Lightfoot, you know, it's not a lot of great entertainers who can say they have reached greatness internationally. Now we got so many, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, Shania Twain, and it goes on and on.
And Celine.
And on. Celine Dion, and it goes on and on and on. But all the Atlanta was probably one of the first to reach that level again. As she talks about Joni Mitchell, when I came here, the Riverboat was happening, and I saw Joni Mitchell on stage live, night after night. You know, but it's a good thing, you know. She is one of the most interesting and provoking women you have ever met. And I hope we have an opportunity to get the second half of the interview. If not, we will try to air it at another time. I just dropped into the studio, and it seems like as soon as I walked in the door, everything started falling apart.
Well, you know, look at this. We're going to take a very, very quick call, just in case. I don't know who's here, but then we're going to play the rest of the interview for you.
All right, it's coming up, so hold your horses.
Okay, who do we have on the line? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
So what's going on with the interview, man?
It's coming on right now. We just got everything
started. No, it's not. This is Atlanta.
No, it's right here. We got it ready.
Oh,
we're
get out of here.
Up.
And here I thought I called in because I thought you needed me in the flesh.
Oh, that's great. Hey, that would be better. Could we do that?
Hello. Well, I mean, it's my dime.
Oh, you didn't go through Skype?
Well, I heard you having trouble, and I thought, oh, well, there goes the interview. So I called.
Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen. We have Atlanta Live. Atlanta Live.
Atlanta
Miles.
Atlanta Live. Atlanta Live Miles.
See what you do to me? You get me all flustered.
Hey, who's this Gene dude who says he met me and I was sharing my studio stories daily on the beach?
Yeah,
not the beaches.
Mack, former Toronto Argo, a movie star. Say hi,
Gene,
to Atlanta, how are you doing?
Fine. Gene who?
Gene Mack.
Oh.
From Toronto Argo.
Don't remember, but, you know, that doesn't mean anything. It was so many years ago.
That's okay. Listen, I've had so many concussions, I don't remember stuff. But, no, I'm just kidding. I can't believe you called in. I love you. You know that? I do.
Well, you know, I just so happen to be – I'm waiting for dinner, and I just so happen to be listening because I thought, oh, why not? And I, cause I think there's been, whatever, there's many people urged me, oh, yeah, live. And I went, live, yeah, sure. So I'm sitting here waiting, and then I heard, oh, the worst thing that can happen in the middle of a show is to have your electronics or technical problems. Don't I know? Because it wound up costing us a bloody fortune in the studio whenever the SSMT would go, you know, kaputsk. And so I thought, well, what the hell? And I called in and thought, well, I'm hoping that there, you know, there may not be a lineup of people in the queue. And so I was, much to my surprise, you answered the phone and here I am.
You know what? I almost didn't. And I thought, who's calling? I told nobody to call. And
I was sending you signals.
Yeah, it was something. And I thought, I better take this call quick.
Yeah, but right.
Oh, man. Well, listen, let's go into some of this stuff. I want to go into, how can I say this? Well, you know what? Like we talked about, tell everybody about after Black Velvet, and as you were talking to me about the royalties, and because people just don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, the fans do, because the fans, I felt it was important to share with fans that, you know, you made somebody very, very rich, but it wasn't me. And that's not, I'm not pointing the finger at my fans. It's not anybody's fault. It's maybe my lawyer's fault for not advising me. But it was I can only really hold the responsibility to myself. I should have hired an American lawyer. When in Rome, you deal with Romans. You know, you don't hire a Canadian lawyer who is ill-advised to advise you. And it was rather fateful. I mean, all I ever wished for was to have a place where people would listen to my music. Perhaps I wished to be viral in those days when there was no such thing as, you know, computers going viral. Now it was all radio. It was the old-fashioned way. And I didn't wish to be rich. I never wished to be rich. It's not something I would wish differently now, because I realize that in order to gain that kind of attention, you really do need a lot of money to protect yourself. Otherwise, you know, you're in trouble. But there was a clause in my contract that stated the monies owed for my overall debt for the cost to make my three records would come from the profits of the first, where they should be segregated. You know, you get billed back for the whatever for the first record, you get billed back for the first record from the profits of the first record. Second record doesn't make as much, but you get billed back for the second record, etc. But because of what's called a cross-collateralization clause that was overlooked by my lawyer, I think it may have been brought to my attention, but it meant squat to me until 5 years later when I had no money and I was dropped from the label. Well, I wasn't dropped. I begged to get off the label, and I did. But I was still not making any royalties. And now that then when I went off the label, I wasn't making any advances either, because I'm no longer with the label. They're not beholden to me. They don't have to keep me alive to continue making records. So what happened was I should have been, shoulda, woulda, coulda. People have managers, but my manager joined the record company. So he was not going to advise me to go against the record company to fight them and say, well, wait a minute, this is wrong, because I was within my legal rights to fight them on this issue and to be more fair, because I'd made them probably $60 million and or more, probably more like maybe whatever. We're splitting hairs now. And I was not advised by my manager because he was on the side of the record company. That's called a conflict of interest. And he left me right after my success to go join Atlantic Records, in later becoming the president for a moment or two, and I was then left, you know, unable to negotiate anything after that two-year mark. I think you get a two-year period where you can, take them to court and share your disgruntled and be paid your what is owed you. But after 2 years, if it's not when I was not, I was awfully busy during the height of my success. I wasn't thinking about these things until hindsight. And I can only tell this story from hindsight because I wasn't aware and I did not have the right people. I was a Canadian and I was signed to an American label. They had me over a barrel.
Well, you know what people don't realize? I got to read this because this absolutely blows me away. Black Velvet, you released the album, Atlanta Miles, in 89.
In Canada.
Right. But,
and the rest of the world in 1990.
Right. And between 89 and 90, Black Velvet was played, and this was the count at the time, over 5 million times, and you won an award because it was played so often.
Well, I think it was played about 2 million times by that period, by 1990, and by 1993 or 4 or 5, it had been played 5 million. But it was still the most played song in the world.
I mean,
and it was up there with the Everly Brothers and the Beatles. It's a very unquestionably popular song for reasons that if I were to begin describing, I would only sound stupid. There's no explaining why. All I can really do is say, gee, thanks. Lucky me.
Ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, this is not the pre-recorded
not anymore.
Interview with Atlanta. No, we had some technical problems, and Atlanta Miles phoned in. So you got
it's
Atlanta
timely.
Miles.
I was very upset over all these killings that are going on, and I was online.
Yeah, I know.
Only to learn that someone was complaining about some American Federation and guns, and I said, guns, schmuns, you didn't take away the knives from the 22 school children that were stabbed in China this morning? Anyway, I was upset about this, and there's nothing I can do but except pray, and as a friend of mine says, informed me, singing is like praying twice. So I guess singing. But I went online to, and I was consumed with this horror and happened to click on and heard the trouble you were having.
I'm telling you.
To be honest, I thought, oh, God, I don't know what was going on when you called. You know what it is? Oh, maybe not. I don't know why, but I was very, like I was maybe counting the clock. And I wanted to call back and say, oh, wait a minute, slow down, take a breath.
Well, because it was funny, when I heard your voice, in my head I went, no, it's not.
Yeah, I know.
It's Atlanta. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. Right?
But, yeah, I know. Well, I think you knew, but when you saw the light, the call waiting in the queue, I think you had a sense.
Well, yeah.
Because, but the worst panic in the world is when you got a live show and suddenly something technically goes wrong and suddenly you don't have a show anymore.
Well, you know what? I want to get back.
At least not the one that you've advertised.
Yeah, well, and we're going to get it on. We are going to get it on. We're going to put the whole interview on. But here's something I find amazing too. Your first album, aside from Black Velvet, Lover of Mine was on there, and that was incredible. Love Is. I mean, every single song reaches somebody.
We spent an awful long time recording that record to make it what it was, and I worked with really discerning people who every single one of us, both Christopher Ward, the songwriter, David Tyson, the producer, co-songwriter, and me, the artist, we were a team that understood. Certainly, we all understood how hard Atlanta needed to be pushed to, this was my one chance. And I was making $40,000 or $50,000 a year as a commercial actress in Canada, but could not get arrested as a singer. So this was, so immediately out of the box, we did a three-song demo, my girlfriend Deborah Samuel, extraordinary art director, did a video, and we submitted it and got signed. 30 days later, I was signed to the most corrupt label in America. And Atlantic signed me, and it was a great prestigious thing because, they had Ray Charles, the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, Aretha Franklin, oh my God, who didn't they have that was grand? And it was so wonderful to be a part of all that until I learned the gritty, ugly truth. But nonetheless, that's how we began. And I knew that I had my chance. My dream had come true. So I had to make the most of it. And I quit acting. And I had my income went from 40, 50 grand to 2,000. That's how much Atlantic gave me to live on in a year.
So
to
nothing.
Yeah. Well, Christopher financed me. He kept me alive. All I had was money for rent, which was expensive because we had parted as the tenants. We were living together, and we parted before we were making the record. But we were still – our music kept us together because we were a team. And it rarely does that happen. But and, you know, I was always ashamed to ask for money. So I had to make $20 last me a week, and sometimes – and I lived off tuna sandwiches. And I remember once going to the grocery store up the street in the Beaches of the IGA, and I put a can of tuna down with my last $2. And she said, where's the money? And I said, but I just handed you my money. And she said, no, you didn't. And I panicked because it was my last $2. I didn't want to tell her that. I have pride. But
yeah.
I must have, with all my force of will, convinced her that I put my money down, because people will try and take advantage of you and steal from you, and that's the way they do it. And I didn't think that. I just thought, this is my last $2, and I only had it in my hand, and I handed it to you. And I think a witness said, yes, I saw her do it. So I went home and was, you know, once again, you know, I had my tuna sandwich for the evening. But I was really, really, I remember breaking down in tears, crying, with wondering what the hell am I going to wear for my videos. Oh, God, I can almost feel it now. And I'm calling 350 radio stations a day in America. 350 stations a day. Atlantic paid for it, of course. But and I couldn't go anywhere. I just couldn't afford to go to, you know, I couldn't afford an onion ring. And I wound up wearing, I bought patent leather. I designed my own dress. I found someone who wrecked the patent leather. I had to recut it myself and bring it somewhere else to restitch it. That was my look, my patent leather, because it was sexy.
Right.
And I used a vintage white work shirt from a man, and my blue jeans and my cowboy boots, and a pair of chaps that I'd had made to wear in the Black Velvet video. And, well, the first video was Love Is. But I did the best that I could, and I was, you know, my credit card was like over $3,500, maxed out. You know, some things just never change. And I managed somehow to create something that lasted. And you know, lo and behold, the Bush J that I wore in Black Velvet that I got for $29.99 at Simpsons, which is no longer a store in existence, at the corner of Queen and Young.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's the Bay now, I think.
It was copied by the Guess Marciano people and placed on Claudia Schiffer and sold billions of dollars of jeans.
Wow.
And the white work shirt was suddenly in posters with, what's her name, the pretty little girl, Brooke Shields, wearing blue jeans and a white shirt taken from the Black Velvet video. I mean, it influenced all of America. It influenced fashion designers. It had such a profound influence. Tina Turner was then seen wearing blue jeans, riding a horse in a white work shirt.
You're right.
It was just profound how me, broke, crying with no money, had to come up with something that was going to be real but yet work to my advantage. So, you know, it's part of my story.
Wow. See, this is the time which, you know, we out here are thinking, wow, you know, she's relaxed. She's sitting back. She's really enjoying what she had done. And whatever, you know, whatever you would be into now, we would never think anybody would, you know, steal all that.
I needed for everything that has happened to me in the last 20 years to happen in order for me to tell these stories now. Because I'm a very unaffected, I'm a very private public person. I know that's an oxymoron. But I am also a very normal person. I'm more normal than most people who aren't famous. And yet you would never know that because of the pedestal that people have lovingly placed me on for my music. But it's quite nice for me because I can come back at people and be very real, and I have no axe to grind with anybody. It's in the past. There's no passion or anger attached. There's no finger pointing. I'm not going to accept the responsibility of blame for what they did to me. What they did was wrong. It really was. But what I learned was the only way we have in this world is to take care of ourselves with wisdom. You know, and naivety, well, it happened to an awful lot of artists. I am not alone. But many people, like Aretha Franklin herself, had to go back and sue Atlantic Records for her money. Everybody did. It's renown what they do. It's just renown, but not in America. I would go to Europe, and they would laugh at me when I told them I had no money. They would just laugh at me and go, how's that possible? And it was, there's nothing more embarrassing than someone ridiculing you when you've already made the mistake. And, you know, over money. So I had to find other ways of accepting what was given to me that money could not buy. And that was the love of the people. And money cannot buy that. Money can't buy Justin Bieber a Grammy.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I feel very, very blessed. And I believe that I believe in a universe that will provide for me what I need. Maybe not what I want, but maybe what I want isn't what I need. So yeah, it's allowed me to take the control off. We can't control our circumstances. Fortunes are won and lost, and that has everything to do with fate.
That's true.
You know,
but it's
really not something that we are able to control. Any one thing could set it off. Like, for example, today, suddenly there was no interview available. That's fate. Well, I didn't want to have that happen, so I called. It's just, it's everything that has happened to me has made me who I am now, and I'm happy with who I am now, and I was very unhappy with who I was at the height of my success.
And you know what? It shows the type of person you are. You sensed, as you said, something was wrong. And now everybody knows she is a down-to-earth lady. She came on and she rescued me, right?
You know what? Remember when Sandy had hit New York? I thought it was so blessed when David Letterman went on and did the show with two or three people.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
I loved it. I just loved it. And he was being so cynical and ha ha ha, hee hee ho ho. But it was wonderful. It really was. The show must go on.
Yeah, and some
that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, many times. I remember once my keyboard player, Ray Colburn, was playing with me at one time. Sensational keyboard player. He was with Honeymoon Suite. And he was playing Song Instead of a Kiss, and that's like that's a multitude of keyboards to have to master and learn. And he did a crack-up job, but it's all electronics. It's not acoustic piano, because it you have to switch from one gear to the next to get those parts of the symphony orchestra on keyboards, etc. And we were in Germany, and the power was out, and we were left acoustically to do the song. I said, so what? And snapped my fingers about face and did it with a cello and an acoustic guitar, and wowed everybody. They went, oh, my God, because that's what we do when we don't have the multitude, when, you know, we don't have all the layers and layers. I venture to say very few people could do that today.
You're right.
Without their auto-tuned microphones or their multitude of layerings of vocals to assist them while they're dancing around and hoofing it on stage. Not
me. I know.
That's the way it goes. That's what I do. And I love that. I think that there's nothing more wonderful. I've seen people that do that, that rise to the occasion when they're in their performance element and something goes wrong. And so they go, oh, well. And then you really get a chance to. I believe that misfortune gives us an opportunity to show what we're really made of.
That's very true.
It's really the very one of the very few times when we are challenged one really knows what you're like until there's a catastrophe, and how you handle that catastrophe shows who you are. Speaks volumes.
It does. There's something I want to mention to the people, because they're not going to know this. We talked about it. You know, that sounds funny. Yes, we talked about it. I know, doesn't it? It sounds like we've been friends for years. It's 2010, you entered a song, and you won the whole shebang, the International Songwriters Contest. It was out of the U.S. Tell the people
I think 85,000 entrants, or
yeah.
I may be wrong about that number, but a lot of entrants. Gotta wonder, you know, well, never mind. I shouldn't judge it. I should just say thank you. That's wonderful. Great. You know, I won the rock and roll. I had entered in the rock and roll category, in the rock category, and the song won hands down Song of the Year. I mean, it doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things other than to songwriters, because it's a bit of a wow, that's weird. But I guess I just did it because I had an indie record with no promotion funds, and I went, "What? It's $35 to enter. What the hell? You don't win the lottery unless you buy a ticket."
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, it shows you still got it. You're still writing from the heart. You're still Atlanta.
I also knew that I had it. I did not expect to win. I didn't expect to win a Grammy either. But I knew that I had something. I knew no one works as hard as I have worked and comes away from it thinking they're crappy. Because I work too hard. I work so that I don't. I'm the biggest critic. I'm the one that's castigating myself, saying it's got to be nothing short of perfection or you can't leave it. That's who I am. And that has worked for me out there in the world. People have enjoyed the hardship I have put myself through as an artist to create, something that I can walk away from and go, ah, that's really good, and enjoy.
Yeah, no, you're right. And you're still moving on. You're still, well, I kind of know you're talking about. Pardon me?
I'm just on a break.
Oh, just on. Well, yeah, you deserved one after, you know, all that. But
a lot of people will say to me, "One hit wonder. What have you done lately?" And I think, well, yeah, it's fine. Wait a few years. Then, people like me are given this wonderful gift. But if there's some stuff they got to deal with, they got to go deal with the stuff first before they can go back into the world and beat their chest and have the world defeat them. You have to figure out, you know, what example am I setting for anyone if I'm not well, when there's stuff inside me. I mean, I sabotaged my career. I did everything in my power once I got to the top of my game to sabotage myself. So for the last 15 years, I've examined, why do you do that? And now, when I'm ready, I will come back and do more of what I've been given, but it'll be very different than what I was famous for then. I'm not done with this world. I'm just taking my sweet time. It's not nobody kicked me out. I took myself out. That's very Canadian of me, isn't it? Out and about. I bowed out gracefully, recognizing that I needed to take care of some very pertinent issues if I was going to be in the public eye, because the nature of this beast, this lady, I am not, I'm far too sensitive and far too, I don't know how to, I don't know, take on too much, too sensitive, too, what's the word for somebody that's easily wounded? Well, I'm far too easily wounded by what people can say, and there's some very, very mean meanies out there. And it hurts. I don't like it. So I've had to really find a way to find. I was not cut out for being famous. And that's, I think, why people who become very famous and who are extremely gifted don't last. They can't really live with themselves, or they can't live with their volatility. They're so volatile. and one little thing, and then a bunch of little things, and then if you're really, really famous, like I was, well, it's 100 million things. And people, in a bad moment, they just go, there's no point in living, who cares, bubba, see you later. And I did not do that because I believe in reincarnation, and I believe that I would have to come back into a life. If I let this beautiful one go and did not appreciate it, I would have to come back and learn my lesson in a more difficult way. And this one's difficult enough. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, that just shows you're not fragile, you know? You're strong.
I'm very strong.
You're strong-willed.
Very, 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 very strong. I know that.
My strength has served me well.
And I'm also very dignified. There are certain criterion where I do not abide by... the idea that sexy, yes, but I will not be sexy at the cost of subjecting female or objectifying women, if you will.
Oh, I know what you mean.
You know, I'm very, and I think my fans have recognized that. You know, I mean, what do I know? I've got fans that don't even know my name, but they know Black Velvet.
Well, that's because your music is timeless.
Well, that was my team of people, and then when I didn't have that team, I still made that kind of music. In fact, when I recut Black Velvet, both the writers went, holy crap, wow, you sang the crap out of that. They were really impressed. In fact, I had David in my car. He was sitting in the back seat, and I put the song on and said, what do you think? Well, he was listening up real close. He said, well, shut up, because I wanted to interrupt. shut up. And as he listened, he said, well, Lana, you can't reuse the vocal. I said, I re-sang it. I was so impressed with myself that he thought I used the original vocal, and that's what he was listening for. He was listening, and Christopher even said to me, the writer of the song, said, my God, you sang it better than the original. And I agree. It is my remake is a better vocal than the original. Well, I'm more seasoned. If I don't sing it better, there's something wrong.
And so, you're planning on an album in the future, something from way back, from the jazz days.
I would like to do a vintage blues record. That's one of my things I'd like to do. I would like to make an orchestrated record where I go and record some of my greatest hits with the orchestra. There hasn't been money for that, but you never know. That could change in a day. But, we got to change with all kinds of things. I've got a film director in the States who wants to do a documentary. And then with an eye towards, I've got 50,000 words towards a book and with an eye towards a feature film, et cetera. Things can change. Things will change for me when I'm ready. I'm not ready right now. Not right now. I still got some more healing to do. But my attitude is very, very good. For somebody, I refuse to allow myself the helplessness or the idea that I'm doomed to what a doctor says or what doubt or worry or someone else tells me is going to happen to me. It's really up to each individual to decide what their fate will be based on how they project their attitude towards life. And my attitude is very, very good. And I like who I am, and I like where my attitude is at, and I have a good sense of humor. I try to make fun of all the crap that happened to me. I like to make people laugh. My shows are an opportunity for me to tell the story in such a slap, sort of a knee-slapping way that they can't help but laugh and cry, because it's pretty sad stuff.
No, it really is.
Hmm?
It is, like, knowing what they did to you. And, see, a lot of people, they're mistaken.
Oh, they're still doing it to me. Miles Copeland hasn't paid me a cent, nor has he issued a statement for my Best Of record or my Arrival record.
Well, see, I was going to mention that because I asked you a question in the interview, and I'll kind of re-ask it now for those people that are listening. But do you think there is a correlation between what happened to you physically? Some people think it was a car accident, but
it was not a car accident.
What happened to your career? People don't realize it was chiropractic.
No, the car accident was a gift from God. And then and 5 days after I if you want to know the truth, Robert Plant was in town and I was going to his concert and I drove my car, so I didn't go with him. I drove to the bar after the concert. And on my way, I was looking in my rearview mirror for the person behind me instead of where I was going, and a cab in front of me backed up into me. And I called Robert at the bar and said, I can't make it. I've just had a car accident. And he was there within 3 seconds. It was just down the street, worried sick, thinking, oh, my God. And there we were at Bay and Bloor, you know, towing the car. And I didn't go to a doctor. I just partied on because my boyfriend was in town and, you know, towed the car to the Mercedes lot and had it fixed. And it was like, oh, my God, it was like $20,000 damage. It really was a big-ass job. And 5 days later, I was riding my horse, and my horse decided not to he wanted to jump a fence, and I did not. I shouldn't have been riding, for one. And the horse, I brought a friend with me, and the horse was jealous of the friend and was like, he wanted to jump this fence. And I said, no. But he jumped it anyway, and it went flying. And I cracked the other side. So that's double whammy. And then, if that's not bad enough, I went to a chiropractor who I allowed to sever my spine by cracking it 3 times. Well, there was a matter of $5,000 insurance money. And in order to pay for free chiropractic, I gave, and there was a time quotient on the insurance money. So I went 3 times a week, which is abusive, and that solidified problems. Now, if I went to a doctor, they would say, oh, no, you were born with this illness. Yeah, right. If I was born with an illness, how could I possibly leap, 50 feet off speakers? Whatever. It all happened for a very good reason, because if I did not stop my constant spurious activities, I was going to be stopped by the universe.
So you would have your body would have broke down?
Yeah. Something would have happened if I didn't stop.
Wow.
So that's the way I look at it. It's when disaster is flung at us, it's always for a very good reason. It's never for no reason at all. It's very good reason. Just a
second. It always seems to happen to good people. Have you ever noticed that?
Ah!
Why?
Can you,
I don't know.
Can you put me on hold for a second?
I can, certainly. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to Alana Miles. She called in here when we had some technical difficulties, and we're going to air this. We are going to air this in a short period of time, maybe next week, so you can hear the whole interview. But it is so incredible to have Alana, to have her call in right now. This is awesome. This is incredible to have her in here like that. And
are we on?
We are, yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. There was someone in my vicinity who wasn't aware I was on a long distance interview. They just didn't know, and it was causing me to I was unable to hear you.
Oh, can you hear now? I hope.
I'm fine now because they just one of those things, right?
Okay, I trust me. Tonight's one of those thing nights.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those thing nights. Nobody's to blame.
No, but we are going to air that whole interview. We're going to get it on next week. People have to hear that.
Well, they're going to think I was on uppers because I listened to only a few lines before I was cut off and I thought, somebody give that girl a downer, Someone give her a Prozac or smoke a joint, something, I don't know. And I think it's my energy. It's just I talk very fast and emphatically, and that's the way it comes out. I'm a high energy person.
That's very true. Actually, you know what? Sandy, who's the director and founder of ComFest, the film festival, and the radio, she's, man, when she gets going, yeah, you just can't stop her when she talks sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I'm the same way. Everybody used to think, here's to do cocaine, and my family would say, no, that's just Alana. Tell me, what is the 911 number that I called? Where am I calling?
Where is Alana calling?
I had to dial 191 something.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, you didn't Skype in.
No.
Skype. Ooh. Well,
yeah.
We're in Toronto. We're situated right in Toronto.
Well, why am I calling long distance?
Oh, the company Blog Talk Radio. They're situated in.
Well, that's the only way I would for sure be able to interrupt and get in the queue position.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. I know what you're talking about.
So I don't know what my phone bill is going to look like, but what the hell?
Well, we only got about 10 minutes left, roughly, 15 minutes. If you know what, we can start airing some of this if you would like to go, because I appreciate you calling. It's been incredible. We could air some
more. Well, you got lots and lots from me. I just saw there was a breakdown in communication and wanted and just felt the urge to jump to the rescue.
Oh, no, I cannot thank you enough. I really can't.
You know, because I understand these things. And when you got a whole bunch of people waiting and it doesn't happen, they all go, oh, bummer, lunch bag letdown. So I thought, well, you know, I love surprises.
Oh, it was a great surprise. I cannot, you know, really, twice in 1 week. Twice
right
in,
on. Well,
incredible.
You were such a delight.
Well, you know what? Like I mentioned, I have done radio in the past, but to be able to talk to you also as a fan is incredible. And to tell you what your music
was. Well,
I thought
it was awfully cute how Gene was mentioning how he remembers a time when I was making a record. And so on. And, but it was really quite cute, you know. I guess the famous fact that I was from the beach, not the beaches.
Well,
Toronto.
He was close. He had the word beach.
Pardon me?
He was close. He had the word beach. So we just got him back in the chair. Gene.
Alana, I was another one of those starving actors you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he was on Night Heat, believe it or not.
Yeah, but I've been in the business 35 years, but there was a whole group of people from the beach that hung out together, and we were all entertainers, actors, whatever. And
oh, it's an amazing place for that. I mean, anybody that worth their salt was from the beach, weren't they? At one point or another?
Yeah, everybody was from the beach back then, yeah.
Actors, musicians, film crew. It's really it's all littered with those types.
Yeah, that's.
And I don't know why, because it's so damn expensive.
Well, it's only expensive to the people who don't live there and don't understand the culture. If you understand the culture, you know on Wednesday you do your laundry, and I used to see you every Wednesday at the laundromat.
No, I didn't know. There's where you're buggered. I used my parents to do laundry. I went up to the swanky pad up at 1166 Bay, my parents' condo, and I would work out in front of a mirror in their tiny little workout space with my music and formulate all my activities while I did my laundry.
Did you live above the laundry then?
No, I lived at 22 Winneba.
Okay, I know where that is. Cause,
it's right down by the lake. You can see the lake from the front porch.
I actually lived on Queen Street above a bar.
Yeah, but there were a lot of girls that looked like me, and I know that there's a lot of people that think that they've seen me, but they haven't.
No, nobody looks like you. You are one of a kind.
You'd be surprised.
No.
I look at, what's her name on The Good Wife? And I watch her, and I go, ooh, that's cool. She looks so much like me.
Margulies?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I think, oh, my God, I could be her sister.
No, you are far better looking.
Oh,
I
don't know about that.
No, that's my opinion. You know.
Well, guess what? I'm a blonde now, so it's irrelevant.
Well, Sandy is looking at me, and she's going, tell her, I think she's better looking, too.
Aw. Well, I'm not looking for brownie points. I think she's gorgeous. I love the good wife.
No, she's a very beautiful lady, but to us, you know, you haven't changed. You're still that same beautiful young lady. And it's horrible what has happened to you, but, you know, God bless you. Your spirit is incredible.
Yeah, I got quite the story to tell, and you know, I know that my story gives hope to others, and that's what really it's all about, isn't it? It's really, the world is really not about money. It's nice having money to do nice things and to afford nice, luxurious things and have a comfortable life. And certainly in my position, when there are no more gigs, it's nice to have royalty checks, you know, to be able to pay your expensive rent, but and the cost of living in Toronto, my God. But at the end of the day, I've been very unusually blessed with an ongoing, loving, you know, ever-growing fan base. Very, very blessed I am.
We go back to when I said your music is timeless. It really is. There's all kinds of people who love it, and we heard in the opening segment about, I mentioned Art Bell, not being a rocker, but it's just, you know, like people didn't realize why you suddenly weren't there. And
because I was so brutally massacred financially,
right?
And I could no longer, I started to see a pattern, and I'm at the point now where I don't want to go with anybody, where I'm waiting for the universe to take a few turns and for me to change my patterns, and to will to me positive circumstances that are different. Also, everything serves its purpose, you know. I did what I did then. I worked like a mad woman and thanklessly, but because I didn't have the money from royalties, I toured until I fell apart. And then royalties are now forthcoming, certainly not as in the millions because of the, you know, moderate radio airplay and so on, but they still are providing me with a lifestyle. I'm always in debt. What the hell? What else is new?
Oh, no, that's
it's
not right.
About
that
money.
Needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some music is timeless, Alana. I was in a piped-in music store today where, you know, grocery store, restaurant, whatever, where they pipe in the music, and I was sitting there and I heard your song. I heard two of your songs.
Which ones?
Black Velvet was the first one.
And Lover Mine.
Love Is.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, Love Is very big in Canada. People love that song.
Actually, Lover of Mine, wow, is pretty powerful. William is...
Well, Lover of Mine is dated. I would like to recut it with a piano, with a proper piano, because it's a beautiful song.
Oh,
but,
really?
But, you know, but the idea would be for somebody... Oh, well, you never know. It was never a single. Oh, not outside Canada. It was my first number one single in Canada, but outside, it didn't really do too much. It did nothing in America. I even sang it on the last Johnny Carson show.
Wow.
Yeah, go figure, huh? What?
Oh, that's beautiful. You sang it on the last Johnny Carson show.
Yeah, before his show went off the air. It was
yeah.
So sweet. I sang Lover of Mine. I was all cool and rocky rolly, and I wore the same outfit as I wore in the video, and he was very sweet and blew a kiss to me, and he was ever so charming. That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's history. You know, more
yeah.
history. See,
yeah.
again, that shows you, you know, that you were there at the end. I mean, think about that.
I know. Well, you know, my entrance on the scene, I released a record. My first record was the last record 12-inch discs before they started making CDs in 1990.
Oh, I hate those. I still miss vinyl.
I love the fact that I got a big-ass 12-inch disc to put my face on.
Isn't it great?
Yeah. And I was the last one before the change. So there was a very interesting cusp. Very, very interesting how the universe has appointed me to be in the right place at the right time, you know, and to be involved in some pretty very interesting people's lives, you know. I won't say any more because I think I prattled on in the interview, which we'll save so that people can get a chance to hear it fresh.
Okay. Yeah, that is a good idea. You want to save a little bit for that.
Leave so. You now because I've got dinner waiting for me and I must rush.
Okay. Thank you for saving our lives. And
worries. It was a pleasure. It was a real pleasure. Thank you, Bill. And same to you, Gene.
My pleasure.
One night dinner on us, okay?
Right on. Thanks so much. Have a good evening.
Thanks very much, Alana. Oh, ladies
bye-bye.
And gentlemen. That is Alana Miles called in live, saved our lives. That's unbelievable. I don't think we can ever pay her back, but we're going to do a dinner one night. We're going to take her out to dinner.
You got horseshoes up your butt, man.
I wish. No, that shows you the kind of lady that she is. She's still, you know, a nice Canadian girl, a nice lady. She's got a big heart. She called in. We are going to air that entire thing next week, start to finish. We're not stopping it. I don't care if the Mayan calendar starts hitting and the world's blowing up. We're going to air that entire thing.
How lucky you got to be for someone who's pre-recorded something to listen in to see how it goes.
Isn't that great?
And when it goes bad, they call up and miraculously save the day because you pick up the phone call.
And I almost
you
didn't.
Got horseshoes up your butt.
But you know what? Also, I got two horseshoes because you were here. You jumped in and saved me.
No,
you
I
came
didn't
in
save
and yes, you did.
I just made the pain less.
You're my David Hasselhoff. You know that?
David Hasselhoff.
You're my David Hasselhoff.
Well, I don't know how much more time we got left, but this has been an interesting
Well, we got 6 minutes. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, you know, so far this is, it's been a different show. We heard about, you heard about how things can go wrong and, you know, thanks to technology, the better it gets, the worse it gets.
You know, I feel sorry for the people who ducked out after the telecast went bad and didn't hang around for 2 or 3 minutes and get to hear Alana, and then we might have got a few live phone calls and they could actually talk with.
Well, you know what? The chats are going crazy. We got so many chats, but I can't get back to them all because we were talking to Alana. I was going to try. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Alana Miles phoned in live.
Half
live and
hand.
Helped us. Oh, look at this. Awesome. Enjoy, buddy. So I said, oh, you really like the show? Oh, it's awesome. So that was earlier. That was by Frank. Oh, Frank, you are the best. I got to tell you. And listen, in the future, what we want you guys to do is hit Skype.
Tell them how to get to us.
Because
most people
Skype.
Don't know how to get to us without paying.
Yes.
Please tell them.
We're going to tell you again. This is what you do. If you're on your computer, you have a headset and a microphone, okay? You go to Skype.com. Download Skype.com onto your computer. Once you've hooked in your mic and your headset, you hit Skype. You can call anywhere in the world. But you don't need to. Just call us. You just want to call us at Confest Radio. And you can get on the air. And it's absolutely free. And if you're on a cell phone, download the mobile app.
Tell them about blog.
Oh, I was just going to. because ComFest is on blogtalkradio.com. That's where we are now. And all you have to do is log on to blogtalkradio.com, and in the search part, just put the ComFest show. Two M's.
Thank you.
Two F's.
Thank you.
You're welcome. See, you know, just in case.
You think everybody spells bad. Nobody spells bad but whoever wrote ComFest.
Well, that's Sandy. You blame Sandy. It's
I'm not blaming anybody.
M-M-F-F-E-S-T, okay? ComFest.
So that's blogtalkradio.com/ComFest.
Yes.
Two M's, two F's.
There you go. It's very
easy.
That's
how you explain it. You just throw out words and nobody listening, nobody understands.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. We got people calling in lately.
But they don't, you don't explain it.
I do.
I'm hitting you now. This
I know. When
him.
You go to the show and you see the phone number, the 914 number, right beside it, now not on our screen, but right beside it is the Skype logo. You see the Skype logo, Skype icon, whatever you want to call it, and you click on that, and that's how you get in for free.
How do people get to listen to us free?
I told you. Download Skype. Go to Skype.com, S-K-Y-P-E. What, I feel like I'm in grade three. I'm spelling everything. You go to Skype.com. Okay, we got 2 minutes. We got download Skype.com to your computer. Send the mobile app to your smartphone, okay? One that costs like $500 that all you people have except for me. Download the app. Once you have the app, you can call them yourself. You just have to click Skype. Okay? If you blogtalkradio.com, then all you have to do, / ComFest Radio.
2M2F.
Thank you. You hit the Skype icon, the logo, and it'll pop right up on your computer. That's it. It's that easy to get on here. That's all you have to do. But again, I want to go back. I want to thank our first interview with Pastel Supernova. She
I
got
to meet Pastel, man.
You love
like
her. She's a beautiful young lady. She really is.
There you go, making those assumptions.
And we have to, again, ladies and gentlemen, we have to thank Alana Miles for calling and telling us that, or just going over part of the interview for us to help bail us out. Alana, you are the best. I swear to God. And this lady, you know, you saw it. This lady has a built-in BS detector. So to help us out like that, you know, she knows we're genuine people.
Well, she didn't want her moment in time to be sullied by your efforts.
What am I an effort? I didn't do the technology. I didn't make the computer. I didn't make the soundboard.
We're about to sound off,
yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So, you guys have a good evening, and we'll see you next week and talk to you next week, and we love you all.
Oh, we'll be on Monday night 1 hour later. It's a Monday night show at 8 o'clock, but next week we'll be airing the Alana Miles, the interview in full, and Monday night Gene's going to have a special announcement. We have a big surprise for you, something you won't believe.
It's not a big surprise, but it's a surprise.
It's a good one. This is ComFest Radio, ladies and gentlemen, brought to you by the ComFest Global Community Film Festival.
Lloyd.
You rock.
We still got 10 seconds.